Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Rob. It was an amazing week of Survivor, and we had incredible podcasts with Christian Hubicki and Steven on the Know-It-Alls. Make sure you catch those as well. Plus, The Circle was back this week with an AI contestant. Taryn, Mike Bloom, and Puya broke down the first week of drops from The Circle and on Renap. Who did Sam Moore find for the big guest? Find out on this week's Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, all right here on RHAP. We know reality TV.
Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who loves to see some brand new survivors, not afraid to get some blood on their hands, their face, their neck. I'm Rob Sestrino. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to season 42 coverage here on Rob Has a Podcast recap episode. Got a great guest here. Gabby Pascuzzi will be with me in just a moment to talk about everything from the Survivor 42 premiere. So happy to have you here with us. If you're listening to the audio version of the podcast, we are also on video. You can go to robswebsite.com/YouTube to check that out. You can also see there our exit interview with Zach Wurtenberger, also on video for the first time here in 12 years of Rob It's a Podcast. We had our video interviews, Watch Survivor Know-It-Alls, and more. And of course, for everything we're doing here during Survivor 42, you could subscribe to our podcast, robhasawebsite.com/subscribe for the links to Rob It's a Podcast and for our Survivor feed to get all the shows we're doing, robhasawebsite.com/Survivor feed. So happy to have you here with us to kick off this season of the recaps, where we talk to all sorts of your favorite Survivor guests. Got some job security news this week. Survivor, it looks like, has been renewed for seasons 43 and 44. So RHAP will hopefully continue on into year 13, and hopefully maybe we can have a pod mitzvah next year. But that is in the future. Let's go ahead and welcome in our guest. Very excited to talk about the premiere of Survivor 42 here with a woman that we know from Survivor, David versus Goliath. Let's welcome in the great Gabby Pascuzzi. Gabby, how are you?
Hi. Hi, Rob. I'm good. I am excited to tackle this monster of an episode.
It's like a monster.
It's like a monster from a horror movie, I guess.
Yeah. So that line about the monster in the horror movie, I guess they came up with that very late in the production of season 41. Because when I interviewed Evie, they told me that the Jeff said that at the fake reunion show that they did. And Evie was like, oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. But they said it with the season 42 people, like the day of the premiere.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So they decided like this is how they're going to market it. And
it's like a monster. You just don't think about it.
Yeah. They just wanted to put a simile in there of mm-hmm. it being like, it's like a monster. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And we all understand what that means. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause the monster's chasing you. You don't have the time to think about where to go or what to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Advantage monster.
There's blood involved. There's yes. blood involved with monsters.
Yeah. Would you say that the monster is a Goliath?
Yeah. Yes. Survivor itself is Goliath. Mm-hmm. Wow. And we are all Davids.
Yes. Well, I have a lot of questions about this new cast and who are the Davids. But I want to just ask about you. How are you doing? What's new with you, Gabby?
Oh, I am good. And I was telling you this right before we got on. If you hear animals rustling, it is my two new
yes.
pet cats.
I'm seeing some like cats just dashing across the background.
You can see them in the background.
Darting through.
They are. Yeah. So I have two new loves of my life. So my cats, Millie and Ollie. And
Millie and Ollie.
Yeah, they're very cute. Mildred and Oliver are their formal names.
So, yes,
so when they're in trouble, like they might have to yell at them if they keep being noisy during the podcast. But here in my apartment in Buffalo, New York, where I just moved last summer, because
I'm in the Bills Mafia.
Oh, I don't know about that, but sure. Yeah. I am a bandwagon fan for sure. I'm like not a huge sports person, but you know, I'm from Pittsburgh. So that's like Pittsburgh people. They want you to be very loyal to their sports.
Yes.
So I can't say anything publicly that would be against the Pittsburgh Steelers. But since I was last on Survivor and probably last talked to you, you know, I was a technical writer. I was working for a software company, a cybersecurity company, and I completely changed my career path and what I'm doing with my life. And I'm now a PhD student in social psychology at the University at Buffalo. So that is why I'm up here. And yeah, I'm in my second semester of my first year of my PhD program. So it's been great.
Well, let me commend you. I think that's very brave to switch things up and do something that you truly want to do. Why the University of Buffalo? Is that they have a specific program that you wanted there?
Yeah. So PhD programs are interesting because it's not really like you apply to the school kind of how you're applying to undergrad, where it's like, oh, I just want to go there because I think it's cool. It's really like you're applying to work with a specific advisor that has research interests that align with yours. And so I knew that I wanted to study relationships. So
okay. On the Love Know-It-Alls at one time.
That's true. Yeah, that was me being sort of an amateur person trying to understand how relationships work and how love works and all of these things. And then I realized you can actually study those things scientifically, and there are actually experts out there who are looking at these relationships through a scientific lens. And so my advisor, who I applied to, is at the University of Buffalo, that our research interests are just very aligned in terms of close relationships. And it's very exciting. And my mom is calling me on my phone, and it's fine. I'm hanging
Pick her up. Put her on speaker.
Oh, no, I don't think that would be good. She keeps trying to call me during very important Survivor-related things, because she did the same thing yesterday. And she guilt trips me like we haven't talked. And I'm like, it's the Survivor premiere. You should be watching it. You need to know when these things are. It's very important.
Does your mom follow the show when you're not on it?
She sort of does. We used to watch it together as a family. So she definitely. Yes, she does. I'm so sorry. I'm distracted because the sound keeps going off and it shouldn't be. So.
Yes. Okay. Well, I didn't say anything funny or that interesting yet.
No.
No, not yet. I hope to. That's my goal here today.
Okay, good. Very good.
My mom does keep up with the show, but I got to be honest, the new era, she's a little lost.
Yeah. Yeah. Moms will be lost. Moms are lost right now.
Yeah.
And I don't blame them. I was a little bit lost at points last season when all of these twists were new.
Right. But Gabby, here's the beauty of it. Okay. That Survivor is like, these twists are going to be so complicated. We're going to run it twice. So now everybody knows how this all works. Now you all seen it before. Nobody's confused anymore.
Except for the players.
The players are still confused. And now it's like, oh, okay. Like if they do the same thing enough times, then we'll all be on the same page.
Yeah, we don't kind of have to have the game theory matrices popping up on the screen anymore about like, so if I reject and you accept, then I get a tarp and you don't get a tarp. So hopefully they've refined it a little bit, because I did find last season fun, but I don't know what game this is anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a different game. It's very cool, but it is, you know, it's new era. One might say
it's a new era for sure. Now, Gabby, do you feel like that your PhD studies will help you better understand and explain what's happening in the game of Survivor?
Honestly, yes. And this is the problem, is part of my interest going into the PhD program was I went through this whole wild thing with Survivor, and it brought up so many questions for me. Like, why do people act that way? Why did I feel comfortable forming relationships with certain people and not others? Why was I comfortable, you know, crying on the shoulder of one person and not the other? And then I got to graduate school and now I'm reading papers about all of these things. And every single paper I read, I kid you not, I find a link back to Survivor.
Right.
And it's especially because I'm in social psychology. So for those who don't know, it's sort of the study of like how people behave in social situations. And it's also related to personality psychology. So, you know, individual differences that make people the way that they are. And that is Survivor, right? It's a social game. So, I mean, I think it would be so interesting to hear from psychologists in different fields, like cognitive, because there are things like decision-making and judgments and, you know, puzzles. But I do feel like social psychology in particular is the field that like every single thing has a link back to Survivor. So basically, if you want to succeed at Survivor, maybe do a PhD in social psychology. And so just to do well on Survivor. Mm-hmm. And do 5 years of graduate right. school just so you can do well on Survivor.
And then you could pay your student loans and you break even.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not accruing student loans for the PhD program. So that's the beauty of a PhD program. Usually you hope for it to be funded. And usually most people going into PhD programs, it's going to be funded, so they're paying you to go to school, which is pretty cool.
Oh, well, that's incredible. Look at you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool.
I'm wheeling and dealing.
Learn for very low pay. I'm living below the poverty line currently, but it's fine.
Yeah. Well, and you've lived on Survivor. You've lived with nothing. Yeah, so this is, exactly. This is really a lavish life now.
It is.
Yeah. Gabby. So what you're studying, in terms of the social psychology, is this becoming more important on Survivor or less important on Survivor as we shift into this new era?
Oh, wow. That's really interesting. I feel like I have thought that this new era of Survivor is so random. And a friend of mine compared it to Mario Party. It's just sort of a game of Mario Party, and you can win stars and you can be good at the challenges. And then like maybe at the end, something random happens and you lose all your stars. And the person who was the slowest along the way for some reason gets a bonus star and they are the winner. Like it is a game of Mario Party and it's very fun. I love Mario Party. I am the person who always wants to play Mario Party, but, I'm not sure really what skills are needed anymore. I don't know. And I feel like social psychology would be really helpful in terms of understanding how others are operating and maybe how you can, manipulate how they're perceiving you. But like everybody, I feel like everybody is sort of a lay social psychologist. Like we all read all these pop psychology books. We look at TikToks.
There's a lot on TikTok.
There's a lot of crap on TikTok too. Oh. There's a lot of psychology crap on TikTok. But you know, and people are reading about their attachment style and people are trying to figure out what their Myers-Briggs personality is. There's a lot
Enneagram,
of people that are,
yep.
Yeah, Enneagram. Love. So a lot of things that are not very scientific.
Oh, you don't like you don't like Enneagrams?
It is not real.
Oh, the shot's fired. Oh my God.
Okay. Well, what I'll say about it is it's like, yes, if you take a test and you're describing things about yourself and then it gives you results where it's like, you are like this, like that is, it's going to tell you what information you self-reported.
Yeah.
But
so what is real, Gabby? What about the five love languages? Is that real?
No. And you know what? I was sad to learn the five love languages. I mean, this is the thing.
What is real?
It's all real, but it's the false thing about the love languages is that you only prefer a certain type. And this is the type that I prefer most because people actually are not very good at knowing what type of support they want. And people actually tend to prefer invisible support. So when they don't even know they're getting support.
Oh, interesting.
And that's actually more effective at times than getting support where you know that it's happening, because knowing that you're getting support can be like an affront on your self-esteem. So love languages, I mean, those things are real. Like, it's like material support, emotional support, all these different types of support that we do give to people. But it's kind of bullshit that like you only prefer one type. And also the guy that wrote it is like a creepy homophobe. So we can just like be done with that. Probably
throw it out.
We're done. We've moved on. You know, Enneagrams, if you have fun with it, I think it's totally great. My point is, I think people have a desire, lay people have a desire to understand how others work, and it's social psychology. And I think that's really, it would be so cool if we could bring research into sort of the lay, you know, consciousness of like these things that you're drawn to, these things that you're intuiting. This is how it works, or this isn't how it works. You might've thought it works this way, but it's not this way. And I think, people on Survivor could probably very much benefit from learning how people work, even if it is a little bit of a game of Mario Party. It's still a social game. It's still a social game.
Okay. So with all that being said, did you see anything socially that Zach was doing wrong in his time on the island?
Oh, that's such a good question. All right. So one thing that I thought of, and I saw that, or I heard that Stephen picked up on this a little bit in the know-it-alls, was I wondered similarly to Stephen if Zach was a little bit doom and gloom, I think, after they lost the challenge. Mm-hmm. And to me, it was a little bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy, which is a concept in social psychology where when you act a certain way, as if you are expecting people to treat you in a certain way, you ironically bring about that very behavior that you were seeking to avoid or that you were worried about. Because if you're acting, if you're showing this kind of like negative affect, this negative mood of like, oh, I know I messed up, other people are going to see that negative affect and see you more negatively, probably. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think if he had been like, I mean, I don't know, because you want to take responsibility, but you don't want to count yourself out. And I felt like he sort of counted himself out, and it was kind of a bummer to see because I liked him.
Yeah, I liked him as well. I got the chance to talk to Zach today, and I talked about, you know, where did things go wrong? And I asked him about the challenge because it seemed like that they were very far behind in the challenge. So it didn't seem like that he screwed up the puzzle and that's what ultimately like made them lose. They seemed like that they were going to lose unless he just completely aced the puzzle. But he said that it was really, you know, Tori threw his name out there. And I think that what you and Stephen are talking about probably is right, but I think it's less about the challenge. I think that really, like, once his name got out there, I think that there was not really a different way for him to go to flip it around.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Yeah. And that's such a bummer, especially because they were supposed to have been in that young person's mm-hmm. alliance. But I think it still follows a similar idea where you don't want to count yourself out. You don't want to be acting down in the dumps. And I think there were probably some ways he could have strategically maybe maneuvered. Although, you know, I feel like I wouldn't be surprised if it was sort of flip-flopping between him and Tori until like the very last minute and he just got unlucky. But Tori is a very... she was a good speaker, I thought. And Zach is supposed to be this like debate guy, right? I thought he would yep. kind of like, you know, come at it with some pizzazz, but, and maybe he did and we didn't get to see it, but he had such a great attitude and I really appreciated that.
Yeah, he did have a great attitude. He's a really good sport about everything that he went through. Do you think that perhaps the addition of the shot in the dark felt like that Zach, instead of like going in a different direction campaign wise, felt like, okay, well, you know, I have my advantage, you know, I'm going to end up playing my, you know, I will turn to the shot in the dark as my, you know, best course of action.
No, I don't think so. I think that probably was his Hail Mary once he realized it was already written on the wall. But I think most Survivor players would probably know that campaigning is going to be a better chance than a 1 in 6 dice roll / vote earn scroll draw.
Yeah. Gabby, do you like three tribes? I mean, you played in a season where you were on, it was two tribes of 10. And I always feel like that you have more outs there. You have more room to hide. And I just feel like that sometimes you, on these three tribes of six, it's just like, okay, your number is up. That's it. Not a lot you could do.
Yeah, I agree. I like the three tribes of six as a viewer, because I feel like we get to know everyone more. Maybe it's because there's only 18 people, or maybe it's because the dynamics are a bit easier to understand when it's six people, because it might be 3-3 or 4-2 or 2-2-2. Because on a tribe of 10, it's sort of like, I mean, what, you need six people for a majority. I feel like it tends to be like, and well, now it's 7-3 or it's 8-2. And it becomes more clicky, and maybe we see less of the one-on-one alliances. But as a player, I would prefer to play on 10 because, yes, there are more outs. And it's terrifying to play on a small tribe, and I do not envy their position at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gabby, did you have any standouts, favorites from this new cast?
No, all duds. No, are you kidding me? This cast is amazing. I have a list of everyone that I like, and it's like, there's almost everyone is on the list. But my number one standout, my God, Marianne.
Yeah.
Firecracker on screen, amazing energy, very cute, fun, funny person.
Yeah.
And also on her tribe, best shirt, top 10 shirt maybe ever. Mm-hmm. Omar and his the emu ostrich shirt.
Yeah, it's an emu.
I did see on Twitter it was confirmed to be an emu.
Confirmed emu. Okay. Well, let me take them in two parts then. Starting with Marianne, who everybody loves Marianne. And I think that even like on the island, okay, it's clear. Okay, everybody loves Marianne. She's a star. I don't know if she can, but does she need to tone that down if she's going to ultimately win the game?
Yeah, that's very possible. And I thought of that too, because kind of whenever there's a standout, very likable person, your first thought is they're a threat. And I'm wondering if she might be goofy enough to kind of counteract that. Like, she's not a superficially charming person. She's very much herself. She's wearing her emotions on her sleeve. Can relate. That's probably why I like her so much. And I feel like that actually lowers your threat level. I mean, when you're like crying, like sobbing, hugging Jackson, she's a very authentic, mm-hmm. emotional, empathetic person. And I feel like that counteracts any feelings of like, well, she's too much of a threat. Like, she's kind of just like being herself. She's being wacky. She's being goofy. She doesn't seem like the most physically, you know, threatening person out there. So she might be in that good spot, especially being like a young woman. She might just by default be underestimated. You know, she's not the kind of woman that people tend to look at like pegging as a Parvati 2.0 on day two. And for some arbitrary reason, we have to get them out because they are Parvati 2.0. She's unique. We've not really seen someone like her. And I think that works in her favor because people are not threatened by sort of past players that she reminds them of.
Well, the case that I am worried about in regards to Marianne, that I think of Elaine in season 39, mm-hmm. where Elaine almost got voted off in the first tribal council because that I think it was Ronnie who ironically got voted off. They said, okay, if she gets to the end, you have no chance. Like, if she sits in the end, she's going to win. So we got to vote her out. And then they just reached a point in the game where they were just like, okay, Elaine, we can't let you get any closer to the end, because if you get to the end, you're going to win. And I'm worried that Marianne is just giving off that vibe, that she's so lovable and everybody can see it so clearly. And her smile is radiant, and Jeff is going to comment. You can tell that she's going to be one of Jeff's favorites, one of Jeff's go-to people every time they get to the mat. All right, Marianne, tell me, what's the reaction right now?
Yeah. I mean, I am curious how much the cast is perceiving her as lovable as we are, versus kind of that goofy, silly girl. She's young. She looks young. But yeah, definitely. I think if she sort of rises to become this like social threat that everybody is friends with, that will be a huge target on her back. If she can kind of play up maybe the like wacky and goofy or emotional side, then people might just think like, oh, she's just here for fun. And she's just like funny. And I could beat her at the end. That's the thing, especially being a young woman. I think it's like, people are going to be like, yeah, I could beat her at the end. They might underestimate her. But yeah, she might have a hard path to get there if everybody falls in love with her the way that we have in the premiere already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just think that the thing is that you know, Jeff also seems to love her. And
yeah.
You know, I know I've talked about this with our mutual friend Christian a lot, where, you know, that some, you know, when you are like sort of like in that teacher's pet sort of spot where, you know, Jeff is going to keep going to you, like it does, I think, put a big target on your back.
Yeah, it is funny how much I think the contestants subconsciously clock who Jeff likes.
Mm-hmm. And who's Jeff going to all the time? Who's Jeff getting the comment from?
And you're seeing as well that they're a good speaker, that they can like spin these analogies. I remember that was what our thing with Christian. It's like, how did you just pull out this analogy about poached eggs out of your wherever you pull out poached eggs from? Mm-hmm. And you think to yourself, like, this person would be scary to sit next to at Final Tribal. This person can out-talk me. And I think it's a very good strategy to be that way in confessionals and be a little bit more tempered on the beach. And I'm trying to parse apart really, I guess, what we're seeing with Marianne, where we all love her so much. We didn't get too much like sort of camp time with how she was talking to the others or if she made any alliances. So I don't know how others are perceiving her.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a weird show where it was a 2-hour episode. And so we got a lot of Survivor, but we really got a lot with one tribe. And then that tribe with Marianne and Omar, we really did not see a ton of camp life there. Other than we saw what was going on with Jackson giving his backstory, and then ultimately when, you know, Jeff comes to the island, we really didn't see a lot of the tribe dynamics there.
Yeah, I will say that was one thing I noted about the premiere in general. So there have been trade-offs, I feel like, in this new format. And I was a huge fan of the new format last season where they started doing these contestant packages. And I was like, this is really cool. We're getting to know people. We're getting to know their backstory who maybe we wouldn't normally get to know, even people who go out early and things like that. The trade-off I feel that we've gotten with that is I felt like at least in this season, we got a lot less alliance information.
Mm-hmm.
We got a lot. We didn't see sort of who was hooking up with who kind of on a superficial level. We got a few. We got like the tribe that went to tribal and then we got like Romeo and Zach went home. So, and then we on the whatever color tribe, I don't know what they're called.
Avati.
You know, we kind of got the pairs.
Yeah, the pairs. Yeah. Yeah.
And then on the orange tribe Taku, we didn't get anything. But we got a lot of like personal content from Marianne and we got a lot of personal content from Jackson. But I'm like, well, I don't know who Jackson was aligned with and who's now upset that he's gone and who, you know, Marianne and Omar were doing the puzzles together, both the triangle and the challenge. Like, are they connecting? I know they're both from Canada. Like, I want to see more alliances being formed. And I feel like in the premiere, at least, it came at the cost of the personal stories, which I'm still happy to get, but I am really hoping that maybe we get some more alliances in the next few episodes.
Yeah, I think it's hard. I know that if they give us just the alliances, we're like, who are these people? And if they you know, spend too much time on the people, like, okay, but what are they doing strategically? So I think that we just have to go along for the ride here. And then when these tribes are going to go to tribal councils, hopefully we'll see more about the alliances in those particular episodes where the editors and the producers are just like, don't worry about that yet.
Yeah.
Just meet our new friends.
Yeah. And I have to hope, I hope it like bodes well for people that we haven't heard from yet. Like, okay, well maybe we'll see there. Cause so far, one of the few alliances we've been shown, the person left that episode. So like,
yeah,
are we only going to find out about alliances before they go home? It's like, well, I was in an alliance with this person, but now I'm going to vote them out.
Gabby, who are some of the other standouts for you?
Lydia.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Yes.
Such good confessionals. I took note of a particular when she had that confessional saying all the things that she's bad at.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I'm nervous about the bug. And
yeah.
I'm pretty sure she said bug.
Singular. Yeah.
And I want to know what bug she's nervous about.
What specific bug? That's a good question.
What specific individual bug is she nervous about? No, but she was very funny. She was a great narrator. I was cracking up when she had the best commentary on the whole blood debacle.
Yeah.
She was like, why are they filthy? And, mm-hmm. and like, she's, oh my God, you're bleeding a lot. Like, it's just very funny side observations that legitimately cracked me up. And I have to say, she has the best Survivor social media of any contestant that's ever been on Survivor, period.
Yes, it's very good. Did you want to comment on anything that she has said?
She said that she has the juiciest, fattest, best ass in Survivor, and I just felt like it was me erasure. It was erasure of me.
Yeah,
so well, I'll take that up with her.
Nobody had ever staked that claim before.
Yeah, you know, it's fair. I kind of thought it was maybe just unspoken. I thought, you know, a few people knew that I held that title.
Mm-hmm.
And then she, you know, it's fine. She is sort of like she put her flag on the moon first. I never said it out loud. So mm-hmm. she does rightfully own that title now.
Mm-hmm.
And I am glad to pass it on to her. But she's very funny. She is a good narrator. I hope she does well. And actually her alliance partner, High was the other person I took note of. Loved High. He was so funny when he was putting the blood on himself.
Yeah.
It was definitely a choice and I appreciated it. But I don't understand the choice, mm-hmm. but I respect it.
Well, yeah, can we talk about that segment? Cause it leads into this new advantage that I want to get your take on, the amulet advantage, which is a three-way shared advantage. So I talked about this with Steven on the know-it-alls, but I absolutely, this was my favorite part of the episode. I was, you know, cracking up when they have the mud and then also a bowl of fake blood. To help sell the story.
To sell the story of untying 20 knots. And I wonder what they told their people afterwards mm-hmm. that they were doing. Yes, the amulet is very cool. I think it's a very good idea. I love the stakes that it introduces in terms of if you vote the other people out, your thing becomes more powerful. Because really, I mean, as much as they're telling each other like, yeah, only us three know about it, and we're going to have a special connection once we get to merge. No, it's three random people. They have no idea if they're going to want to work together. They have no idea if they're going to be on the same side.
Mm-hmm.
They have no reason really to trust one another. And High said it so well when he said it's game theory. It's the prisoner's dilemma, just in a different form, where you are incentivized to get rid of the other people. And you don't want to be sort of in the schmuck position of being the person that's like overly trusting.
Right.
And
for what? An extra
for
vote?
What?
Yeah,
exactly. There's not the incentive. So if this were a game theory matrix, what you do when you look at these decisions is you write in the payoff for each of the decisions. And literally it forms like a table. I'm sure Christian could write it up on his whiteboard.
Yeah.
And
well, can I ask you, so when you say, when you write in the payoff, what does that payoff look like? Is it like a number from one to a certain other number?
I think if it were like a monetary thing, like a lot of them are done with money.
Yeah.
And so it would be like, you know, you get $0 or you get $5 if you coordinate, but you mm-hmm. get $10 if you backstab them. But I think you could also write in there sort of qualitative, I guess, you know, you could write extra vote or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is the payoff for cooperating, as you've just said, is not that high.
Yeah.
You have a much better incentive to to backstab, which I'm sure is what the thing was designed to do. That's what the producers want to happen. And I think in Survivor, it almost always benefits you to, in the game theory games, to be selfish. And I think Dalton Ross said this last season, and it's a very good way of thinking of it, which is like, if it, at least in something like Shipwheel Island, where it's sort of like, if you all defect, then you all get nothing. Well, so what? That's fine. Because then you know that the other people got nothing. And there could be an argument against, you know, like if you're on different tribes, then it doesn't really matter what the other, you don't care if the other person gets nothing. You care about, I don't want my thing to go away. I don't want my vote to go away. But I think you almost always have to act selfishly. You don't want to be the schmuck. And Hai is a data analyst, I saw. So I think he actually can do these kinds of calculations in his head about, you know, at what point, how long should I cooperate for? And at what point is that kind of tipping point towards the scale of, like, you know, the benefits of staying together now are not outweighed by the benefits of backstabbing. And I'm going to make the move before they can take me out. And yeah, there's so much. There's a lot of like philosophical, mathematical ways to look at this. And I have, again, readings in my grad school classes talking about the prisoner's dilemma and the trapdoor and the all these things. And there's not really an answer, because it depends on how much you trust the other person. It depends on how much you think they trust you. And there's just so many factors that in Survivor, I don't know what the right decision would be, but I think I would probably be selfish.
I don't even think it's an option. It's like so watered down what you get an extra, like for three people, like what are the circumstances that three people from three different tribes would come together to make an extra vote happen?
Yeah, it basically is like it was not designed to be used for that. It was designed to be a bounty on the other two people's heads.
It's a trap.
Yeah, it's a shootout. Who can get each other first and convince the others, like, we need to use this for an extra vote. No, get their asses out.
This is like something that Jigsaw would set up in one of the Saw movies. You want to play a game?
Yeah.
Yes. Here's the game. It's called Amulet Advantage.
Again, there's a game on Mario Party that's exactly like this, and you're trying to jump onto little clouds to get different amounts of money. And but if you collide with another player that's trying to get to that amount of money, neither of you gets it. And it's very fun and very funny. And like, most of the time, everyone is trying to go for the larger amount of money and you're all falling off. And it's just a matter of like, who will beat the others to getting the most amount of money. And I really hope we see it unfold in that way. I really hope we see it as a bounty being placed on these players' heads and them all gunning for each other. I would be so disappointed if it ended in like, the three of us are going to team up and do an extra, I can't imagine.
There's zero chance.
It won't happen.
Maybe the two could get together and steal a vote. Maybe you could see a scenario where that happens, but there's no way that the three of them, and they're all like incentivized for every time, like, all right, let's take a look at the new Vati tribe. It's like, oh, please be.
I know. I was thinking that. Yeah.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Apes hunt humans. That is wrong.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Gabby, I want to ask you about Jackson being medically evacuated from the game. Of course, really great that we got to hear Jackson's stories. Did you get to read any of Jackson's interviews from today?
I read one by Mike Bloom.
Yes. And it seemed like that, you know, Jackson felt, you know,
happy with seemingly how the story ended up coming out on the show, and just felt like that this was something that he was going to be able to come out there. It was not going to be that big of a deal, but ultimately they were monitoring him closely and his medicals just were not going in the right direction.
Yeah. Yeah. That was so upsetting to watch, especially because we had just fallen in love with him a few minutes prior with him sharing about his transition and being so open and vulnerable about that. And I want to touch on both of those things, because the one thing I want to address is, like, I'm so grateful that we got that story from Jackson and that he was willing to share that with us. Just especially with, like, LGBT rights and especially trans rights being literally under attack right now in our country currently, present day, right now, as this is airing. And you have this man talking about transitioning on national TV on prime time, talking about how it was so painful for him to not have his parents accept him that they became estranged. And sorry to get on my soapbox, but that is what that is what the legislation that's being passed right now is doing to kids, doing to trans kids, and doing to kids in Florida right now. I hope that his message reached people who have never met a trans person before, which, because a lot of people, they don't have empathy unless they see a personalized anecdote.
Yeah.
A story from someone who is very likable and, you know, realizing that this isn't just some abstract thing that's happening in, like, kids' schools where all these, like, I don't know what people are imagining is happening there, but it's not that. It's just people trying to live. And so I'm just so grateful to Jackson for being willing to speak about that, because he certainly was not obligated to. Right. Yeah. And
well, I think that that's, like, the power of the show and sort of, like, behind the diversity casting, which was the ability to tell these different stories where that there's so many people who watch Survivor and they get the chance to meet these people, and they do feel like that they come to know people from all these different walks of life. And it's such a powerful thing where if you're a 22-year-old, or a person that's been watching Survivor for 22 years, not to say that you are 22 years old, you've met, 600 different people that you may not know, and you feel like that you know them, like, particularly well.
Yes. Parasocial relationships, another area of research that I'm currently delving into, but people really do feel like they get to know characters on their TV and they feel connected to them. And that's really important for eliciting things like empathy and compassion. When you give, a face to people that are affected by these very real bills and laws and pieces of legislation that are being debated in our country when they really have no place to be, because it's people's well-being and it's people's health. And Survivor has a conservative fan base. It does. And people who may be against people having access to things that Jackson has gotten access to and was able to talk about on national TV. And I'm so happy that he was able to. And to segue, I'm so happy that he was able to talk about his medication on national TV as well, when, again, he certainly was not obligated to. And I think even that amount that he did to minimize the stigma of being on lithium or being on, whatever it might be. I've seen on Twitter now people are talking about contestants and are they able to use antidepressants and what is the deal with medication on Survivor? And that's never been talked about before, really. Mm-hmm. And I definitely did not know. And so I'll share a little bit about sort of how I saw it before and after, which was, as everyone knows, like, I've always been very open with the fact that I'm an anxious person. I'm an emotional person. I may have cried once or twice on my season. And so I've always kind of known, like, anxiety is a thing that is in my life, and I've gone to therapy for it, and I've done different forms of therapy for it, but I was never on any medication for it. So I still don't really know if Survivor allows you to be on, you know, antidepressants or anti-anxiety or whatever it might be. I also was diagnosed with ADHD before Survivor, and I mm-hmm. was taking Adderall and things that you would take for that stimulants. And I stopped taking it because, ironically, it can make you quite anxious. So I stopped taking it before Survivor. So again, it was something that I never, I didn't have to ask medical if that was okay, because I was already off of it. Fast forward to present day, I finally decided that antidepressants and anti-anxiety medication was something that I wanted to do, because I've been doing the work. I've been doing therapy, and it's still not quite enough. And I finally realized, like, oh, you know what? I'm doing all the work. Sometimes, like, your brain just needs a little extra help from right. some chemicals. You actually just have a chemical imbalance, and that's fine. And so, and I've gone through so many big changes over the past year that, like, I was very depressed, and I'm on antidepressants now. I'm on an SSRI now, and I've never felt more stabilized. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I still go to therapy. I still do all of those things, but I'm so happy that I'm at this point in my life. And the reason I'm sharing that is because if I were to go on Survivor, I don't know what they would say. I personally do not know their stance on, you can be on an SSRI, you can be on whatever. I don't know what it is. Yeah. And actually, if anybody knows and wants to tell me, please tell me, because yeah. I'm curious.
Max Dawson had a Twitter thread today where he talked about a medication that he was taking that when he went to go play on Survivor, and he said that he got a doctor's note to he made sure that he had a doctor's note. He insisted that, you know, that the doctor said he needed this. And then, because you are allowed to take, just, you know, for people who aren't Survivor players, you are allowed to take, you know, certain medications with you to go play. I don't know if they have a list of sort of like, okay, here are the substances that for insurance purposes, we can't let people play Survivor, or for whatever, you know, Survivor Medical deems that you can't, you know, it's too dangerous for you to play Survivor on certain medications. It sounded like from Jackson's interviews that I don't know if that was on the table for him to continue on his medication and play Survivor. It sounded like he was attempting to wean off and had, I think, only a couple of pills with him. So I don't even know if that was an option to continue on the medication and play in the game.
Yeah. And I may have gone a little bit too off on my tangent about SSRIs and whatnot, because I do understand from the show and from his interviews that the reason that the lithium in particular was such a problem was because it can become toxic when you are malnourished or dehydrated. So that seemed like more of a specific medical concern related to that medication. But it does, first of all, the reason I commend him is because talking about your medication on a national platform, like, it's probably scary, especially for something that lithium that is quite stigmatized.
Can I commend you? Because I feel like that you talking about your own medication and your own journey, I think, is really commendable to talk about on a podcast.
Thanks, Rob. The reason I wanted to bring it up was also because I want to say, like, if any producers are listening to this, like, I do think people should be allowed to take their anti-anxiety and antidepressants out there. And that's why I caveated with, like, I don't actually know if you can or not. And it's given that it's something sort of non-toxic like lithium, because I've heard rumblings of, like, well, maybe you couldn't. And I know for ADHD, I don't think that that's permitted. And that is another thing that I struggle with. And that I'm now on Ritalin for that. I'm on my full cocktail of things, trying to figure things out. And, you know, it's a bummer, I think, that, like, it comes down to, like, equity. What is equity?
Yes.
How do we level the playing field? So if somebody has, you know, a disability, and so they need a medication to be on that even playing field. But like, I'll admit, you know, I am more focused when I'm on Ritalin. And so is that an advantage, or am I just at the normal level that other people are at, or is it an advantage because it suppresses my appetite? And so I think it's hard because I think they would argue, you know, well, it has to be something that you need to be on sort of maintenance wise, and, you know, Adderall and Ritalin and stuff. You can just go off of it pretty much, but this like comes an SSRI, you couldn't.
Yeah. In Big Brother, I think also where, I think that that's been, talked about a little bit more about what medications, players are allowed to have in the house and not in the house. I think it's just a decision, that needs to be made with the Survivor medical staff. And then, also like, you know, I think that ever since the, you know, they almost lost Beast Mode Cowboy, I do think that the Survivor, you know, medical team and specifically the insurance for the show, like I think takes these matters very seriously. And I think that they are always going to side in the side of caution with these matters.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's such a bummer that Jackson had to leave that way. Mm-hmm. But honestly, the legacy that he left behind in one episode was incredible. I am so appreciative. And I think we all should talk about mental health more and be open with, you know, you need people on Survivor taking medication for their heart or whatever, and you're taking lithium for your sleep and anxiety. And I think that's wonderful that veil was sort of lifted for us from the show point of view. And he had a wonderful outlook just when he was leaving, how grateful he was and how positive he was to even just be there for 48 hours. And that honestly, it shows, I think, the kind of person that he is.
So Gabby, his tribe then loses Jackson in that way. Of course, in David versus Goliath, the Davids lost Pat suddenly without warning. And he went out of the game. Can you talk about what that's like for the tribe to lose a member so early on without having been to a tribal council?
Yeah, it's really heartbreaking. And I think Omer said it well in the episode where it's like when you're watching, I think you do underestimate the survival element. And it is freakish how fast you become close with these people. And I could imagine even more so on a tribe of six people. Like they probably were just up all night doing these fireside chats, you know, sleeping to stay warm in the shelter. And especially in the early days, you're all relating to each other as fans. You're all excited to be there. People are singing the theme song. You know, you're all talking about your audition, how you got there. And it's heartbreaking, I think, to know that someone else is losing their shot. And it's a weird thing because you signed up in the game to vote them out, and voting someone out feels bad too, because you're shutting out their dream. But to see it be taken away, like in a way that is so outside of the game, is devastating. I think everyone's empathetic to like, well, this could happen to me. This is like worst case scenario. We haven't even played the first challenge yet and he's being taken out. Or in our case, like we haven't even been to tribal council yet and he's being taken out. And, you know, similar to Marianne, I was sobbing openly when Pat was gone, even though I'd only known the guy for 3 days. And it's very emotional. It's very emotional, but I think it actually makes the tribe stronger because you've gone through this turmoil that's not related to a vote together. Mm-hmm. And it bonds you all having had to say goodbye to someone in this way that really was nobody's fault.
Mm-hmm. So one of the other things that I noticed from last night, okay, so obviously we've lost now Jackson and Zach. So we've lost two of the nine men that are in this game. Also, we had where all of the advantages that were found in the game, the extra votes, and then two of the three people, minus High, who got the advantage amulet, also were women. And I was just thinking about, you know, how far we've come from Survivor David versus Goliath, where, you know, famously, you know, Angelina talked about how the advantages were all being found by the men. here we have the women loading up here on extra votes and a lot of advantages and two men out of the game. Do you think that this could be maybe a season where we see more of the women dominate the end game?
Oh, I hope so. Yeah, I definitely hope so. I do think it's funny that in the way that they fixed the gender disparity and getting advantages was just like, well, we'll just send people on random quests. Mm-hmm. You don't have to like leave camp to go search for an idol anymore. We'll just like send you to a summit where you spin a wheel. But I actually love that because, you know, here we have sort of people who maybe wouldn't have the opportunity to feel comfortable leaving camp and go looking for it, doing that now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it didn't even occur to me that two men went home in this first episode. And I hope that bodes well. The thing for the women, the thing I worry about is the men are always the paranoid ones about the women. The men mm-hmm. are always the one like, well, I don't know, we lost a guy. Now maybe they're going to do a women's alliance. And like, the women barely ever actually get together and do a women's alliance. It's mostly just paranoia from the men.
Yeah. And it hasn't come up. Nobody's talked about that based on what we've seen in the episodes. But, you know, it's interesting. Even though Erica won last season, that there was a point where after Shan got voted out, it was like, okay, well, like, looks like, you know, probably a man is going to win this game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, hopefully this new era, we're turning it around. Maybe the Mario Party randomness works in, you know, the favor of people who wouldn't traditionally win an early game. And I don't mean that to say like Eric only won because of chance, but I'm saying maybe the element of randomness keeps people on their toes enough where we are not sticking to these kind of predictable or, you know, hierarchical ideas of power structures with the men sort of going around camp. Like maybe there's enough being shaken up that it's like, it's really anybody's game.
In the Ika tribe, we saw Roxroy really being a little bit of a drill sergeant in terms of putting the shelter together. Was that at all reminiscent of your experience with Pat?
I love how much we're talking about Pat.
Legends
never die. I know. Yes, really. That was his star episode. Yeah, Roxroy was hilarious. Mm-hmm. Like it was just so funny to me how he wouldn't even take crap from like them having fun singing the theme song. He's like, I can't do it. And Romeo's like, come on, man, they're just kids. You gotta have fun. And by the way, I loved Romeo too.
Yes. Yes.
And I loved Roxroy because he's just so himself. And that is my favorite type of Survivor players, like people who can't help themselves. Cause he's definitely a smart enough guy to kind of know, like, I don't think I really should be doing this role. And he even asks, you know, he asks, Drea, like, tell me if I'm being too lectury. And she's like, yeah, kind of. He's self-aware, but it's like, he can't help himself. He can't help himself. He has to be telling them where to go. And again, I love that we get backstory from him here in the contestant package, because I think on a normal season, he might have just gotten that 2D edit and people would be like, oh God, I hate this guy. He's like this, like, you know, bossy guy, like has no sense of humor. And then we see his backstory and he's like, you know what? I'm a stay-at-home dad and I'm used to talking to my little kids and I'm realizing that I can't talk to these kids out here like this. And you get to understand who he is and you get to see that soft side of him and you realize like this is a real person. It's not just a caricature and it makes me love him so much more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Zach had said in talking with him today that it really was not that fun. He said the most fun that they had was that there was 30 minutes where Roxroy had gone on an interview.
Oh, no. They're only having fun when dad's away. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. I mean, he was really a drill sergeant. He was very serious. Was their shelter like amazing after that? Or
I don't know. Did we ever see it? I don't know if it was anything special
for all that.
Yeah.
I mean, they were getting work done. You can have, you know, whistle while you work. You can have fun. You can sing the Survivor theme song while you work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that frowned upon, do you think, or they encourage you to sing the Survivor theme song?
I don't know. I was wondering the same thing because it was a lot of it. And mm-hmm. I think it probably happens every season.
Yeah.
I wonder how much your theme song for the know-it-alls gets some.
Oh, I see. I would think almost never, because I think that it would be probably in the same way that we saw Zach voted out. I think that you probably would want to greatly hide the fact that you not only like are such a Survivor fan, that you listen to Survivor podcasts, that you know the theme song to one of the Survivor podcasts by heart.
Okay. Yes, you would think, but I remember hearing Kellen say on a podcast once that she and somebody else were singing the know-it-all mm-hmm. theme song. So...
Well,
ding.
Yeah, that they, is, yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, well, that is, I mean, Kellen is one of the, you know, great, you know, Survivor super fans.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. I wonder, I think you must be brought up every season. I think RHAP is probably brought up every season and the producers are probably like, can you stop
please, please
talking
stop
about
talking
this?
That, that they,
we can't yeah. air any of this. mm-hmm.
Yeah, that please.
Hey, yo, Robbio.
Yeah, that was here.
Yes.
Hey, yo, Robbio.
Yes. Okay. Shout out to Kellen. Yeah. And the producers like all they do is complain about this show. Stop talking about them. we're not airing any of this. Okay. All right. Gabby, I had a question about the David versus Goliath. Another question. Do you feel like, okay, that Survivor casts in the new era of Survivor, is it David's versus David's versus David's?
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Are there any more Goliaths on Survivor?
Right? It's just Jonathan with the dreadlocks. It's just mm-hmm. large Jonathan.
That's yeah.
He's the Goliath.
He's the mayor of Slamtown.
Well, don't say that. You can't give him that title. Okay, there's laws. He's and an governance.
An aspiring mayor. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he might have his own town. I don't really know what.
I'm sorry.
You can't. You would offend. I mean, I'm going to have to take this up with the comptroller now.
I apologize.
Okay, very good. Yeah, that man is huge. He is like so large, mm-hmm. and everyone else. I saw wasn't who was saying that it's the most unathletic cast
Steven.
Of all time.
Yes. Which I thought was a little unfair. I've
strong people there.
Yeah, I've done like 12 hours of Survivor previews, and not once I'm like, boy, this is a very unathletic cast.
But I do kind of know what he means. I mean, there are strong. I saw Lindsay, Drea, like there are people that kind of stood mm-hmm. out to me where I was like, oh, they're fit, they're in shape. It is David. So regardless of physical strength, though, I do think Survivor is very much into the idea of this is your growth story. And how much are you going to change as a human being over 26 days? I mean, it is a yeah. wonderful experience and you can learn so much and it does change you in a lot of ways. But it's a little heavy handed now with the like, yeah, you're a completely different person on day one than you were on day 26. Like it's 3.5 weeks. Don't get me wrong. It's life changing, but I don't think every person's story has to be about how they've grown and changed. Sometimes it can just be like, yeah, I actually was like, I'm a pretty good Survivor player. I'm pretty good at the challenges and I did pretty well. And yeah, I'm proud of how I did. Like every time it's like, I underestimated myself and now I've grown and I'm not, that was me. I'm like, mm-hmm. you know, don't get me wrong, but that seems to be the route with casting now.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Not just casting, you know, they're always looking to cast people that I tell people who are trying to go out for the show, make sure you tell them not just who you are and what you do, but why you're here and why now. I think that they are really mm-hmm. looking for a why are you on Survivor? You know, like what is why at this particular point is this the right thing for you now? And I do think that the show more and more, as opposed to it's like, I think that there was a point when the show, I think, was a little bit more focused on like, well, what will you do to win the game? It's a little bit more about like, yeah, you win the game, but it's really about like pushing like the person who won the game push themselves past a certain point, not necessarily that it was all about like strategy or gameplay. They were just like, you know, who evolved the most.
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it. who pushes themselves out of their comfort zone. Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? Because there's a lot of things that, you can do that are not Survivor. Mm-hmm. There are so many activities and hobbies out there that are not playing Survivor. Why are you doing this? And I think for a lot of people, it's to put themselves in a position that you would never ordinarily be in. I would never jump off of a, 20 foot tall thing into the ocean. Why? Because I'm scared. I don't want to do it. But I would do it for Survivor. People want to push themselves to their limits. It's a very specific type of person, I think, that wants to be on Survivor. And maybe it is the type of person that is looking for that self-expansion, is looking for that growth and pushing themselves out of their comfort zone. So maybe it makes sense that a lot of the stories have been about evolution and growth, because that is the type of person that wants to play, and that they're very, open to new experiences, open to risk taking. And I think that's fun. I'd rather that than sort of seeing fame seeking people that are like, well, I just want to be on TV. Like, I don't know, maybe a different reality TV show on CBS.
Gabby, do you think that this is the way that the show is focused, especially now coming out of the, year and a half that these contestants had been through prior to going into Survivor, where if, hopefully as things become more and more normal, again, knocking on wood, do you think that we will have less of that in Survivor, or do you think that we'll only go further in that direction?
Less of sort of the growth story and all
that?
Yeah,
yes.
No, I think they're loving it. I think Jeff loves it. I think Jeff maybe missed his calling as a social psychologist. He like loves being this, journalistic type of guy that's like, and what does that mean for you? And oh, I'm seeing your body language and something shifted in you. And he loves that. Oh my gosh. Jeff would like love for every season, every person to walk away with like the epiphany of a lifetime. He would absolutely love that. It would be very flattering, I think, to him and to Survivor as a franchise of like, look what we're doing. We're like changing people's lives. You were an awkward nerd before, right? And now you are cool. And yeah, you got this probe stamp of approval, really.
And not just that for the person that's out there, it's really for the person at home, that the message is that you too can, accomplish and change things in your life and go in a different direction because you watch Survivor.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. And I think immersing people in this world where it feels like, yeah, you too can do anything. And it was brought up so many times in this episode too. We had Daniel saying, if there's any kid in the hospital right now watching this and thinking, I want to get out there, or I just want to get out of the hospital. That is very much like, and Survivor is a form of escapism for that type of thing. And I think it is inspirational because it's ordinary people. Like in the same way you would watch the Olympics, because it's inspirational to see, wow, I didn't know the human body could do that. It's so amazing how much training that must have taken. But it's a bit removed because you're like, well, I know I could never do that. That's so much training. Those people are like superhuman. And Survivor is different because it's regular people, and it really gets people to say, well, I could do that. I could do that. And that's pretty much everyone that applies nowadays. Everyone that's cast is someone that went, well, I could do that. And I do think Jeff loves that. Jeff loves the idea of like, yeah, there's like a 12-year-old kid right now that's thinking I could do that. And in 6 years, they're going to say they're going to apply and they're going to be, well, my math's off. Mm-hmm. No, yeah, 18. Well, though I've heard
I think they're letting 16-year-olds apply.
Yeah, don't do it. If you're 16 and listening, please don't do it. I think you're a much better player when you're older. I wish I would have played when I was older. I wish I would have played at this age rather than at 25. But yeah. Oh, Jeff
later
loves
days,
that stuff.
Right. Yeah, he loves it. And I mean, we saw it a million times in Survivor 41, where it's not just about like pushing yourself, but it's also about you didn't give up. You didn't quit. Heather, she had like Heather has no quit, you know, so that was like her story the entire time. And even going back to Ceree on the balance beam, it's just
classic,
as long as you never give up, keep trying. That's really the ethos of Survivor in the modern era.
Yeah. It would be really funny if it was like, here's this guy that thinks he's great at everything, and then he loses because he's not that great at things. Like, so the opposite direction, which does happen, which happens all the time. People come in with these huge egos and they're like, I'm obviously going to win. And then their egos get freaking destroyed. Mm-hmm. But Survivor doesn't show you that part. I mean, maybe it does, sort of Winners at War. Everyone was like, oh, even though I won, I had like trauma afterwards. But
Yeah,
Survivor definitely wants to be uplifting in the same way, you know, American Idol or other shows like that want to be uplifting. And I want to show you, like, you could do this. Just persevere. It's a very American ethos. Yeah.
Which I do wonder how the show would handle somebody in this new era, somebody who was a straight up quit. I wonder where the whole show is about. Never give up. Don't quit. Like, I wonder, you know, because and Jeff has, you know, really gone in a new approach where he has such kid gloves with everybody. I wonder how the show would handle that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, they've always kind of treated quitters with, like, you know,
disdain.
Stain. Like, and I never connected that before. That really the ethos of the show is never quit, always stick with it. You can do anything, and they don't like anything that kind of goes against that. And I never put that together. I don't think they would be very happy with quitters.
And I'm trying to rack my brain, and I know I'll get dragged on Twitter if I get this wrong, but I can't think of a recent player who quit the game.
Yeah, on my season, B left because she had gotten injured.
But that, like, it still is like, okay, that's like a medical-ish. Yeah. Medical-ish. Yeah. Medically. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll just... My reactions
medical adjacent. Yeah.
Yeah. My reactions will work for the video and not for the podcast. Mm-hmm. So it's... Yeah.
Gabby, I have some questions for you from the listeners of Rob as a Podcast on a variety of topics.
Wonderful.
Okay. How about from Clay, who asks, does it seem so far like this season will be different enough from the last season to hold your interest from a gameplay perspective? I like the new characters, but I'm nervous that it may feel played out in some ways. We started talking about this in the opening about how we're recycling so much of it. Do you think that it could get boring?
I worried the same thing. Because, okay, even though the players haven't seen it, who's not to say that they're going to play it like a very similar way, you know, the way that the first season kind of figured out how to navigate the knowledge is power advantage. Who says that this season won't also figure that out? So it's almost like there might've been a benefit to them actually having seen it. Mm-hmm. because they would be like, well, okay, I don't want to be obvious and go that route because that's how it's been done before. So it's like, it does run the risk of them sort of doing things the same way. On the other hand, I do think that they've changed some things enough where it's still interesting to us. Like, we didn't have the amulets before. I guess that's the only thing we really know. Mm-hmm. But
they made them do the triangles.
They did. Yeah. They basically forced them into doing the triangles.
Would you have done well with the triangles?
I think I would have if I would have taken my time like Jenny. In this round, I would. If there were multiple people and you got two guesses. By the way, shout out to Jenny. Did excellent in that. And I loved that she was connecting it to her being a designer. And, like, just so funny that everyone's like, yeah, I'm at 11. At 11. And they're
that was Jonathan.
Homer's like, I'm at 36 already. And Lydia did the same thing. They're all like, we're done counting. And she's like,
we'll go do something else. Yeah.
Yeah. So, where was I going with this? It's fun. It's fun to see them do things that maybe we didn't get to see them do the first time because they didn't pick that option. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see, you know, if they're with Hourglass and if it's going to be used the same way. And it's, I don't know.
You know, I wonder if that there were some production issues with this being the season where, you know, that they had issues getting to Fiji. I'm not sure if there were any issues with like getting supplies where I wonder if they sort of had to like knock out two seasons of stuff, like with only like maybe like whatever sort of supplies they had for one season. So I don't know if we will necessarily see like challenges used, but I wonder if because of the logistics issues of being in a COVID bubble where I don't know, maybe they might not have had access to like create as much stuff and they have to sort of like use things twice.
They only had access to an hourglass store.
Well, say like the Shipwheel Islands, you know, they have that set up. It's like, okay, well, we're not going to go set up a whole nother thing.
No, I don't think I buy that. I mean, they don't have to have the idols work the same way. An idol's like a thing on a piece of string. I mean, they had a year to think of a bunch of twists. I think they genuinely just wanted to see the twists played out.
I do wonder if we'll see the challenges recycled.
Yeah, those are a little easier to recycle because it's sort of like, okay, you've got a platform and you can make them hold that type of ball versus that type of thing. I will say the reusing of Shipwheel Island, I tweeted this, but if I have to see the animation of how tall the hike is up that island one more time,
The animation? There's like, they put on like a like travel by map? Yeah.
Yeah. Every season since Edge of Extinction, where they had to climb up the hill to get the rice, and then Winners at War, they had to climb up the hill to do whatever they were doing up there. Last season, the summit was up there. It's the same hill, I'm pretty sure, and every single time
they go,
wow. Is that
the Edge of Extinction that they hike up?
No, I don't think it is, but okay. It doesn't matter. Anytime there's a tall hill.
Did you climb that hill?
No, I didn't climb the hill, but I feel like I have because I've seen them climb it four times, and there's a little animation that lights up the path every single season. We get them saying, "Wow, I didn't realize it was all the way up there we had to hike to." Oh my God, for goodness sakes, just bring us to the ship wheel. Just spin the ship wheel. It's fine. We don't need to know about the hike.
Yeah.
Oh gosh. They're reusing the animation, maybe. I don't know. The animation budget was maybe lower this year.
Gabby, so this is from Middlebrow Elitist on Twitter. Is a Harry Potter-based alliance always doomed to fail?
Yes. Yeah. No further comment.
No further comments.
No, okay. I actually couldn't believe that the Gen Zs liked Harry Potter. I thought that was like a cringy elder millennial thing to like. Like, this is coming from someone
very,
that like
very choogy, right?
It is so choogy. It is. I was a Harry Potter kid. And then obviously, you know, I've fallen away from it because it, you know, death of the author, death of the author. And now the content that comes out now, I don't even know. There's like four new Harry Potter movies I haven't seen. And it's just a bunch of men in suits, like fighting with each other. And it's Dumbledore. But it's so boring. It's like, I saw a screenshot on Twitter and it was like this gray background of like these angry old men. Like, it's so boring. Anyway, point being, are 20-year-olds really fans of Harry Potter anymore? That's so embarrassing.
I don't know. You know, my kids who are, you know, they are not book readers, but they've definitely, you know, watched the movies and they seem to like them. So I don't
good.
Know. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. They were a staple there and they're great. They're great for kids. It's very magical and fun if you pretend like you don't know anything about who wrote it.
Yeah, they don't know.
But yeah, maybe actually a Harry Potter alliance would be very effective because you're bonded by something so embarrassing that it's like a secret you have to keep between each other, where it's like, if you say anything, I'm going to tell everyone that you're a Harry Potter fan. And then that is a really strong bond.
Wow. I mean,
it's an unbreakable vow.
Forget the amulet advantage. I mean, this is a real, like, deep, dark secret that could bond the players together.
Exactly.
Mutually assured destruction if somebody is going to break the bond.
Yeah, just absolutely humiliating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you ever had butter beer?
I have. I have.
Is it as delicious as they say?
You know what? I'm not going to lie. It's good. It's basically like butterscotch and caramel cream soda, and you can make it yourself. But if you're going to listen, my family lives in Florida. Like, I have been to the theme parks many times. It's good. It is good. I'm sorry. It's good.
Yeah. James Tiernan on Twitter says, please podcast with some gumption.
Oh my gosh.
What was it like for you last season when Deshaun quoted one of your most famous quotes, right?
Sure.
That
out of all of my famous quotes, yes.
Right? That he brought up about how that you said to what was the quote?
If I'm doing something with gumption, like something like that. I don't even remember it. That's how it's clearly not a famous quote.
Yes.
How it felt was, I feel like this is now the phrase that you say right before you're about to do something stupid, like try to vote out your closest ally or throw whatever he was doing with throwing Erica under the bus. So it was very funny because it was the one night I didn't watch Survivor live, which I always watch it live. I live tweet. I have fun with it. And that night I couldn't. And when I got to my phone, I had like 5 or 6 texts saying like, oh my gosh, you got quoted. And I was like, oh, I have to watch this as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. And then I see the quote and I'm like, oh, cool. He quoted me. And then I see what he does right after, which is blow up his game. And like,
yeah.
And I was like, no. I would not like to be a part of this narrative anymore.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that he quoted you and then did something regrettable.
Yeah, and that's what I tweeted at him. I said, wow, yeah, you definitely played with gumption, but just remember, I got voted out right after I said that. Yeah, I got voted out. So it's not a good... No, it's definitely like a cognitive dissonance thing where people, including myself, you want to justify like the risky thing that you're about to do. And so you're making yourself feel better by saying, well, yeah, I'm just playing with gumption. I'm being like really bold right now, even though like, you know, it might actually be something kind of inadvisable, but you're going to like justify it by saying like, well, yeah, I'm like a huge risk taker. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely what I did. I think I was burned
gotta
because
make
I was
big moves. Yeah.
I got big move-itis. Yeah. And a lot of people get big move-itis, but it's okay. You just call it gumption and then you like look really cool. And Jeff, you know, thinks you've evolved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then Deshaun is quoting you a couple of years later.
I know. It's wild. I honestly can't believe that I was quoted.
You know, in talking with Deshaun, I believe that David versus Goliath was his first season. I think you made a big impact on him.
Ah, classic. Yeah, and I know he's a huge fan of Davey. There was a deleted scene where he was saying Davey was sort of his inspiration for coming out there and being like the first black guy that he saw that was kind of like pushing the status quo of what Survivor had typically had on as players. Although I guess if that was his first season, I don't know what he had to compare it to, but... Anybody who compliments
he heard things. Davey,
I'm sure he did. Anyone that like looks up to Davey is good in my book.
Mm-hmm. Okay, this is a question from Cheryl who wants to know: is looking for an idol and surviving the vote a potentially good thing for Tori and her threat level in the long run? She kind of reminded me like a chaotic Angelina/Mike hybrid.
Interesting idea. So I guess the idea is that because she's sort of stained her image so early that now she's not going to be seen as much of a threat.
I guess that's the Mike part of it, where that Mike who was out looking for an idol early on and then Natalie told him about what was going on and then he was able to overcome that. I don't know if it's necessarily like if you survive, that's a hard and fast rule. If you were the sort of like had suspicion on you and then you survive a vote, you're good.
Yeah, I don't think I buy that. I think it's bad. Probably it's bad to have a bad first impression, because I do think like those kinds of things are hard to overturn, especially now it feels like, who is her alliance? And if you're, I mean, maybe it would be fine if you're someone like Mike, where yeah, he was caught, but then he's so sociable. And I mean, he's an unusually sociable and likable mm-hmm. person that he is able to then create alliances and ingratiate himself. I don't know if Tori has that same ability. So I don't think it can be a hard and fast rule, because I think if you have that stain on your image from the beginning, it's just another reason for people to vote you out. Sort of like, well, yeah, she escaped the last vote. And so like, let's get her out now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We haven't talked much about Tori. She had a little bit of a target on her because of going out and looking for the idol. I did think that she was pretty savvy in terms of, okay, talking to Drea, and then for her and Drea, sort of, instead of like, okay, well, you said my name, well, you said my, and then they said, okay, well, let's work together.
Yeah, that was a good level-headed conversation. And I don't know what to make of Tori, because I think Fishback put it in a very funny way yesterday when he said it felt like she was gaslighting us as the audience, because yeah. It was like, well, I wasn't looking for an idol. I was getting food. Why are they mad at me? And it's like, right. You just told us you were looking for an idol. Like, and yeah. And she's like, little do they know. And it's like, but they do know a little, mm-hmm. a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what to make of her, but I was impressed by her ability to maneuver the vote off of her. Like I said, I think she was a little bit more, I don't know if it's persuasive or just her demeanor somehow was more convincing than Zach's. Like, I don't know. She seems like she's a good speaker.
Hmm. Yeah. She definitely is a student of this game and these types of games. She's played in Sequester season before. So, I mean, she came out ready to go. I did think it's funny that you said that she made a bad first impression, where she told us in her preseason interviews that she studied the science of making good first impressions.
Ah, I see. Yeah, see, that's the perpetual conflict in Survivor. Is I think she probably did, and she probably did the, you know, checklist of like, talk to others about their interests, talk about Harry Potter world, act interested. You
wear
know,
blue things. Because that is a ooh, color that people like.
It's a calming color. Be a very beautiful blonde woman. Like, these mm-hmm. are all things that do make people like you.
Mm-hmm.
And in Survivor, you're in sort of a weird upside down world where your game actions also contribute to your perception, where, you know, if you really were worried about first impressions, I probably would go look for tarot with a partner. Or, I mean, if you're looking for the idol, then you run that risk. So you can't have both. You either have to make an amazing first impression, you're everyone's best friend. Then also in Survivor, that presents a double-edged sword. Like we talked about with Marianne, you don't want to be too likable.
Yeah.
So I just think, this goes back to your question about like, if you studied social psychology concepts, like, would you be amazing at the game of Survivor? And it's like, I don't know, because Survivor is not the real world and people act really weird on Survivor and you're acting weird. You're not acting like yourself. The context is just so different from how things work that you might think you're making a wonderful first impression. Your act is absolutely bombing it.
So Gabby, hypothetically, you're on a season of Survivor. At what point do you go and look for the idol, if at all?
I have no idea. I am bad at Survivor. Like, I did not look for the idol as much as I should have. I only looked like when I thought I had a really clever opportunity. Like, you know, I looked when I was at the beginning of my swap tribe and I was looking around the waterfall where mm-hmm. Angelina walked up her 100-foot ladder. I don't know what point you do. Do you do it on day one? I wouldn't.
No.
Do you find a buddy that you trust? Part of me does wonder, like, you know, actually on day one, when I talked to Christian, I broached the topic of like, did you see any advantages in the like pile of wood that we won, because he was sort of the one untying it. Like we had won tools and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was like, did you see any clues? And that was so scary for me to do, because you kind of don't know who you can ask that kind of thing to. Like you almost, everyone acts oblivious to the idea that there are advantages or idols out there. So I wonder if it would benefit you to like have a very strong day one, day two alliance and just be like, let's just look for it together. Because when you're with two people, no one's thinking they're looking for an idol, but that's so risky. I genuinely don't know. I don't know. And then if you're Zach and you feel like you're going home, I mean, was he should have just been spending all of his time looking for it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. And who knows? Maybe he did. I mean, he was sure enough to know to play the shot in the dark. That would have been a good question to ask him.
Yeah, I'm sure he looked for it. I mean, it's hard. I definitely looked for it, but people will get out there before you. And I don't know. I don't know the right answer. I never found an idol.
Yeah, I know. I think I would probably just put all my time into making relationships. And I think I probably wouldn't even deal with the idol.
You know what? I think I would too, because an idol is also such a stressful thing to have. Mm-hmm. And like people have won games without having idols. People who have had idols have gotten voted out. Like there's not really, I don't really know if we know of any correlation between like if you get an idol and then blah, blah, blah. Like it's a nice thing to have, but there are so many other things that you have to do in the game to position yourself well.
I feel like that the chances of me getting voted out because I'm looking for an idol are probably higher than the chances of me finding the idol and saving myself with the idol and playing it at the right time.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's a really good way of looking at it. Same here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let me ask you about the shot in the dark. Edward Morris, the great Edward Morris, wants to know, would you have ever played your shot in the dark?
I think it depends on the situation, right?
Okay, so you had a shot in the dark in David versus Goliath. Do you think that would there have been a tribal council where you would have played it?
No.
Because you never thought you were going home at any tribal council.
Yeah, the only tribal council I thought I was going home was the one where I was ending up going home. But I thought at that point, like, the writing's on the wall, so I have to... Like, at that point, I was worried about vote margins, where I was like, well, if this is going to work, then, like, I need to vote for Christian. Otherwise, like, the numbers don't pan out. And I think that's generally the danger with Shot in the Dark, is it's, like, weighing... Jeannie did this last year in different play weighing, is my vote more powerful right now? So is the vote margin, like, do I think it's thin enough for me to use it? Or is the 1 in 6 chance of safety powerful enough? And yeah, I would not have used it on my season because I was trying to do a thing that relied on vote margins. It's very different than like if it were an idol and it guaranteed safety. But I think, you know, Zach demonstrated probably the best and maybe easiest use case to use it is when you think it's unanimous and the writing's on the wall and you're like, I'm going to use it.
Okay. Do you think we will see the shot in the dark played more in this season?
Why would it be played more than in season 41?
Well, I feel like in season 41, we only saw it that one time, and Sydney kind of got voted out because she ended up playing it. I wonder if that we will see, because the seal was broken at the first vote with somebody doing it, where it's not like it's not history. It's not a big deal. It's just something that people do now in the new era of Survivor. I wonder if we might see the shot in the dark played 5 or 6 times in this season.
Oh, wow. I'd be surprised if it was that many times. That's like half the tribal council. I think people care about their vote too much. And people often don't think that they're going home or they think that they have an out, or they've been convinced in such a way that you need to vote for so-and-so and that'll save you. That if you didn't vote for that person, you know, then you would feel like you've accidentally voted yourself out or something like that.
Let's make a bet. Let's make a bet on it.
Okay.
How many times do you think that the shot in the dark will be played this season?
Maybe once more.
Once more? I'll take the over.
Yeah, because okay, that's good. Because I will take 1.5 and under then.
Okay.
Because I think it'll either be 0 or 1 more time.
2 more times. So what are the stakes for our bet?
I don't know. What are the stakes?
I don't know. Do you want a cameo from somebody?
Definitely not.
Okay.
Not at all.
Great answer.
Why would I want
What would you like? What do you want?
Oh my gosh. What do you want? Cause if you win, so, cause we gotta,
I don't know. Let me just, are Millie or Ollie on the table?
My cats?
Mm-hmm.
You just told me you got a new puppy.
You could ask for my dog.
I don't want to do that. I don't want to take away your puppy from your children and your like new home and your new puppy. Oh my gosh. I will take a shout out at the next know-it-alls, event.
All right, fine. A shout out. Just like, we wish Gabby was here. Let's toast to Gabby Viscusi, the winner of the bet.
Yeah. Tonight was the last night we could play
shot in the dark, and she was right.
Oh shoot! Yeah, you might not know. Okay, so
I have
a feeling that
we'll be around that time if we have another live event.
Okay, well, yeah. So I would like an admission of wrongness embarrassment.
I would like you
to be very embarrassed and bashful and be very sad.
I will.
Lost the bet.
What if I write a notes app apology to you for
absolutely?
Yes. Okay, that's what I'll do.
Okay, and I will do the same. Okay, notes app apology. Yes. So I'm sorry for my transgression. It won't happen again. That's fair. I think, and I think we should practice it, doing that, because it seems that's what everybody at some point in their
it's good practice
public persona will have to do at some point. Mm-hmm. So we should get ahead of it.
Get out in front of.
All right. So 1.5 over and under. We got it.
Okay. Michael Butler O'Rear Jr. asks, at what point in your season do you wish you had fake blood? Would there have been any utility for you?
Any utility to the fake blood?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. Maybe like at the loved one's visit, I could have like strewn it over myself so that my mom was like, oh my God, what are they doing to you out here? And like, we would get a lot more time together because I really didn't get to talk to her for that long. Or maybe I could just use it for some fun pranks. Mm-hmm. Like I could like maybe act like I was eating someone's blood or like, I don't know. Maybe I could have used it to actually get us some more pairs of clothes, more sets of clothes, because they have so many sets of clothes. And I know this is like a corny thing for it to be a bitter alumni, to be like alumnus, to be back in my day, it was blah, blah, blah. No, as everyone knows or should know, my season was the first season to not have bathing suits. And so we were the guinea pigs and we did not have any other clothes. We did not have more than one pair of underwear. We had one pair of underwear. And my season, we were so vocal. I remember at Ponderosa hanging out with some assistant producers that were done. They had wrapped their part of the show and they were like, so how did the swimsuit thing go? What is your feedback? And we were like, more clothes. We need shorts for the challenges. We need more underwear. We need jackets.
Were they receptive?
They were like, that's good feedback. And then here we go. Seasons later, they've got athleisure. They've got like coordinated like crop tops and dry wick.
But are
shorts.
You happy that your feedback was listened to?
I am. I am so happy that we were the ones to enact change and reverse the curse of Tyler Perry. We smashed the hourglass. We got more clothing on Survivor.
Yes.
Less food, but more clothing. So, I'll be that grumpy alumni that's like, I am annoyed that they have more clothes, but I am happy for them. And I'm happy we don't have to see them in their disgusting underwear. So yeah, maybe I would have just like thrown blood all over myself. Mm-hmm. So they'd be forced to give me some more clothes.
Well, if it's any consolation, I watched a Madea homecoming this past week and Tyler Perry has a lot of wild ideas.
Yeah. He writes those movies in like a writer's room by himself. Yeah. Like he's not even a writer's room.
Yeah. He's the only writer. Yeah.
Yeah. He maybe should not be doing that. they're wild. What a strange sort of franchise of movies.
You didn't watch the new one, right?
I don't know. No, I don't think I've watched any of that. Like, I feel
it's
like
a great podcast about it.
Oh, who was on it? Was it Chappelle?
Chappelle and AJ Norris and myself. We watched.
Okay, absolutely. I will maybe he'll just listen to the podcast. Maybe, do I have to watch the movie to listen to the podcast?
Spoiler alerts, but yeah, you could just jump in with the podcast.
Maybe I'll watch it and listen to the podcast sort of like at the same time.
Yeah.
Watch it on mute or something.
Yeah. Or you could protect your peace, as Chappelle would say.
I famously don't protect my peace with any reality TV show. As you know, I have been consuming Joe Millionaire this season.
Well, thank you for being here with me on Joe Millionaire finale night.
I know. I'm taking
I hope
away
I will
from
be
watching.
Unspoiled when I watch it after this.
Yeah. I'm like three episodes behind. I have to catch up. I have to know what's going on in that mansion full of crazy.
The manor, please.
Those wacky gals and guys.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Justin Fetich wants to know, Zach was the biggest super fan of the game, but most of this cast at this point of Survivor would consider themselves huge fans. Do you think it's a good move to flex your fandom in front of the other contestants, like saying Jeff's catchphrases for him and making references to past contestants, or does it paint a bigger target on your back? Is it something that will bond you to the other contestants, or is it sort of like, oh, okay, that this person knows Survivor, better get rid of them?
Yeah. Oh, it's so tricky because I feel like everyone they cast now are total super fans, nerds. They can't keep it in. There must be a fine line to cross where you want to bond with others over like, yeah, it means a lot for me to be here. I love this show. You're bonding with them, but not sort of over analyze deep cuts. Maybe not singing the know-it-alls theme song.
Yeah.
I remember Nick on my season would say like my favorite player is Nyanka, cause he wanted to people to kind of think he was just watching for funny people. Cause you don't want to be like, well, my favorite player is Rob Cesternino or Stephen Fishback. And people are going to be like, oh, okay. So you think you're a know-it-all. So yeah, I don't really think it's something you should be flexing. I definitely would not say Jeff's catchphrases. And also on the line of what we were talking about earlier, where I think people just don't really like when you're like Jeff's,
teacher's pet. Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah.
So Zach also said in his exit interview that he felt like that he was sort of like entrapped into saying the line that he said that he got to the tribal council and Jeff's like, hey, want to say the line? And he's like,
yeah,
he can't turn it down. Well, he said he was like, wait, what line? It's like, you know, the tribal council line.
Did Jeff really have to like, he had to prompt him?
Zach said he didn't know what Jeff was talking about.
Yeah, I don't think I would have gotten the words wrong too, I think.
And it really, I think, was entrapment because I think that Jeff knows at that point that Zach is going home. So it's like, okay.
Exactly. Yeah, entrapment. Calling entrapment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then he could say the line and then people could say like, oh, see, super fan gets voted out because he's saying the line.
Yeah, yeah. I had a feeling it was not of his own volition. Because Jeff said it. It's not like Zach was like, can I say it? Can I say it? Because that would have been really freaking dorky. And I would have absolutely like dragged him for that if he had done that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, I still feel like that the people that are the biggest super fans, like I feel like that they tend to not love that in watching other super fans.
Yeah, yeah. I think they feel competitive, sort of. And
yeah, they're playing bad. That's not how I would play.
Yeah, it's also like it's make you a little aware of your own cringe. Like I feel like when other people are, it's like it's fine for me to be a nerdy super fan in private, but then when you see someone else like geeking out
it's
and
not
saying,
what "I would do."
Yeah, you're like, God, that is so embarrassing. It's almost as embarrassing as liking Harry Potter. But like, it's fun, I guess, that the contestants are super fans. Like, yeah. I appreciate it. And I really hope, you know, it's going to make for good gameplay. I'm such a miser sometimes that like in the opening when every single person is like, oh my gosh, there's Jeff Probst standing there. I'm like, guys, you've gone through casting. You've like met him already. It's just, it's sweet and it's fun. I mean, I thought Marianne was adorable, but then like we got it like two more
like
times.
From
like
Mike,
we got it from
Mike
and then we got, and we
wait like, till my friends see this.
Yeah. And I'm like, this is, we get it. You're all fans. I'm so salty. I'm just a boring old salty washed up Survivor player now. I forget how joyous and fun it is. It is really joyous. Like, soon you will become a cynic like me. It's fine.
One day. Okay. All right.
Well, and even Jeff said it gets old fast. I appreciated that self-awareness.
Yes. What was the context that he said that?
It was when Mike said, like, oh, it's so cool that you're standing there. Yeah. And he's like, it'll get old. And then Jeff did some weird posing. I don't know if anyone caught that. I caught it on the rewatch because I did want to do a rewatch to our premiere. And Jeff was posing. I want somebody to get some GIFs of that, please.
Mm-hmm.
GIFs. GIFs?
I think it was, yeah, whatever. Whatever you want.
We won't get into it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Alex wants to know, why would Tori think it would be smart to go out on her own on day one when, as super fans, everyone should know breaking away from camp on your own will lead to idle speculation and make you a potential target?
Yeah, I feel like this is a danger with people who are fans, like not realizing that other people are also fans. So it's like, it seemed to me that she believed that her lie about the food would cover up enough for that. Where she's like, they think I'm looking for food, but in reality, and she said, I know it looks bad to go off on your own. So then it begs the question, like, so do you think the other people are stupid? Like, you think they're actually buying your lie about food? You have to really, I think that's the hard thing as a Survivor player. You have to really remember that other people are playing and you're not playing with inanimate chess objects. Like, they are perceiving you, whether you want to be perceived or not. And it is a rookie mistake.
Okay. Randy Newpel wants to know.
Randy Newpel!
Who would you want to play with? ... In the sand.
In the sand? Oh, amazing. Thank you so much for this question, Randy Newpel. I want to play with all of them in the sand. I want to play with Lydia in the sand. I think Lydia and I are very similar. I feel like it's all the same names I've said already though, but I want to play with all of them in the sand. I want to play with the fake blood in the sand. I want to play with isn't the immunity idol really cool? The like the Ouroboros, the snake eating its tail thing.
You like it?
I do like it. I'm a fan.
Yeah. I was wondering with this immunity idol that is a snake that's eating its own tail. If you and I were talking about similes and metaphors earlier, but is there a more apt metaphor for the state of Survivor in Survivor 42 than a snake, which is actually eating its own tail?
Oh my gosh. Wow. Yeah. So what's the implication here that Survivor is like this, oh God, dare I say it? Monster?
A monster? Well, Gabby, you watch Survivor to go on Survivor, and then you go on Survivor and they talk to you about, like, so what does it mean for you to be on Survivor? Like, And then you talk about, like what happened on other seasons of Survivor on Survivor. It's like, okay. And then you're doing like the same things. It's like, what they don't know is that actually that, we've already done these challenges, but we're doing them again because they didn't see them.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing. I looked it up. I just looked up the Ouroboros. Ouroboros. I think Ouroboros. I just did the little sound thing. And it says it's a common symbol depicting a snake swallowing its tail as an emblem of wholeness or infinity.
Infinity. Yes.
So infinity, I think.
Survivor infinity.
Survivor season infinity. They're just, it will go on forever and it will morph into something that none of us will recognize in a little while. But I'm going to keep watching it. But it does say, so it's like immortality, I think it's saying. And it's, this is actually a little disturbing. So it said of the Ouroboros that he slays himself and brings himself to life, fertilizes himself and gives birth to himself. So we've kind of got this I don't know.
Motion machine. Yeah.
Yeah. Centrifugal force. Mm-hmm. Perpetual motion. This kiss, this kiss. Is Jeff the one? Is Jeff fertilizing Survivor and then giving, it's giving birth to a new era?
I don't know. Sounds like Survivor guy territory. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm probably good on the Jeff and fertilization metaphors. I think we'll probably end that there.
Yeah. Okay.
I do recommend the Wikipedia page, though. It's actually, it's not as good as the Survivor Wiki, shout out, but it is, you will learn a lot of things that I can't say on the podcast.
Let me ask you this question from Jordan Chong. Have you ever been as happy about anything to the level that Marianne is happy to be on Survivor?
Yes. Oh my gosh. I love that she wears her emotions on her sleeve. And honestly, we saw both. We saw her like huge, contagious grin. And then we saw her like sobbing at Jackson. I love that. She's such an expressive person. Obviously, you know, I'm a huge proponent for, you know, not being ashamed of your emotions, including joy. And I'm so happy that she's sharing that joy with us. And there is a gif of me actually in our opening of our season where I have almost a very surprised and smiley face. It's when Jeff says the name of the season and like it's me clapping, and my friends use it to make fun of me all the time because I just look like way too excited.
You were just so happy about
it. I was like, like my mouth's wide open. It's now an emote that I use on my Twitch channel because it's really like my mouth has never unhinged to that level before that it was. So I think Marianne, I think, has a more teeth than me, maybe. Yeah. I think she maybe has more teeth than the average human, where her smile is so bright and wide. I loved it so much.
So, okay. Speaking of Marianne, are you aware of this, that in the preseason that Mike Bloom and I did a preview of all of the different players, and Mike got to ask them questions before they went into the game. And Marianne was asked, what is your favorite moment in Survivor history?
Oh.
Yes.
I don't know what she said to that.
And do you know what she said her favorite moment in Survivor history is?
No.
When Gabby asked Christian if he would play the game with her. Oh. And he asked, and he responded, in the sand.
Oh my gosh. I actually did not know that. I did know, because somebody sent it to me, that I was at least one of the many players that she listed as somebody that she, I don't know if it was that she liked or that she, I don't remember, but somebody sent that to me and it made me very happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. We're wearing the same outfit in the marooning.
Oh.
Basically the same outfit, like very fun.
Well, I thought I saw on Twitter that she said she created her own outfit. Right.
Well, so that was a joke. That was a tweet from before she went on Survivor when she was just a fan. And she said, like, I'm so obsessed with Survivor that I imagined what my marooning outfit would be.
OK, so that was not her actual one.
It's not her actual outfit. And then when she got on the show, she kind of retweeted it and said, like, oh, my gosh, I'm actually on the show now. I have an actual marooning outfit. Mm-hmm. No, but I tweeted a picture of us side by side because she's wearing very fun, patterned, flowy pants. And I love that for her, and you know, any way that I can compare myself to her, I will, because I just want to be her.
Yes. Who doesn't?
Who doesn't?
Gabby,
we all should.
I know you have extensive notes from season 42's premiere. Was there anything from your notes that we didn't get to cover?
No, we covered so much. It was
so much ground.
So much fun.
Okay.
And we really did. I said everything I wanted to say, and thank you for letting me get on my mini soapbox and talk. I worry sometimes. I think people will think this is irrelevant. I don't know why you're talking about yourself and your antidepressants on this podcast, but I, you know, it's fun. I think when I get to
talk about what's important to you. I would much rather have you talk about something you're passionate about than go on about something that you don't care that strongly about.
Yeah, it's not that often that I get to like sort of talk to the community like this. Like, you know, I'm on Twitter and things like that, but like, you know, much like Christian with Jeff on that 6-hour challenge, I sort of have a captive audience right
that's
now.
Right.
So, you know, hopefully, you know, if it reaches one person who's like, you know what, I've thought about going on anti-anxiety meds, and like, if this is something that gets you to consider that more seriously, then I'm happy to talk about it. And again, I'm happy for Jackson and the show to have sort of brought up things like that. And it's the RHAP community is just the best. Oh, and
thank you, Gabby.
You've done an amazing thing, and I love all of them. Each and every one.
Each and everything. All of the things
all
that I've done.
You. Yes.
It is a big topic of conversation, certainly in my family, that I can assure you. So I appreciate just, you know, how forthright you are talking about it.
For sure. And I just, you know, I saw people talking about it on Twitter, and, you know, I have to comment on everything that's talked about on Twitter. So
sure. You have to.
I must.
So I have a question from Elizabeth Berry, who says, when is the next Love Know-It-Alls with Gabby? Her bed frame advice changed my life and I need more advice. Do you remember what bed frame advice you gave to Elizabeth?
Yes. Although I was okay. This is so funny because I think I was basically saying you need a bed frame because it's a cliche.
Oh, she just had a mattress on her floor.
And maybe she did. I don't know. Or maybe it was I was warning against maybe being with men. I feel like the cliche is for like young men who've never had furniture and their mom's done everything for them to like not have a bed frame and things like that.
Yeah.
They just have a mattress on the floor. Like it's sort of a cliche thing that young men
right.
do. And so I don't know, maybe Elizabeth didn't have a bed frame and she got a bed frame, or maybe Elizabeth like went on a date with someone and then went back to their place and they didn't have a bed frame. And she was like, you know what? Gabby said,
love yourself. Yeah.
You know what? You deserve to be with people that have bed frames, and you deserve a bed frame. And I want you all to have a bed frame.
Yes. Okay. That's important.
This podcast is sponsored by
that's
Bed
important.
Frames R Us.
Okay. I want to also reference one of your tweets from last month. It's on the subject of Euphoria. So spoiler, but not real. I mean, not really real spoilers. You tweeted, the high school in Euphoria has an excellent theater department with an amazing budget and high production value sets and lighting equipment, but also uses cardboard signs to do a scene change. I guess to remind us, it's a high school play about sex and drugs. And I couldn't get over this. At my house, Gabby.
You were watching it too?
Of course. The amount of money that was put into the off-Broadway production of Lexi's Our Town?
Our Lives?
Our Lives? Was that what it was?
Yeah.
Why? Who greenlit this? Was there a drama teacher?
Is Lexi in the theater department? Is she like, listen, the reason I feel so passionately about this is, believe it or not, I was a high school theater kid and I was president of our fine arts council. So
right.
I did things like, you know, look at the budget and things like that. And I, in my senior year, was the assistant director of our school play. So I literally was Lexi, but with a faculty advisor.
And did anyone come in and say, like, Gabby, I got this one woman show basically about me and my friend group. It's very tawdry. A lot of explicit drug use. There's a dance number that
goes on for a very long time
about the football team. Very suggestive.
Yeah.
It really has nothing to do with the plot of this play, but we're gonna go for it.
Yeah, and there's smoke machine and we need all of the smoke machines and like multi-level. I mean,
there's gonna be
budget.
Could we build like a rotating locker set?
Yeah. How did Lexi get this gig? Because this is what I'm saying. The reason I was able to assistant direct my senior year was because I was in all the theater classes and I was like, you know, you work backstage and you do, and you can't just walk in and do a play about you and your friends. And then you know what? After, again, spoiler alert, after it gets interrupted, and then they were like, the show must go on. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? People were just beating each other up on stage. Where is the faculty? Where are the teachers? And it was just ridiculous. They had the most expensive lighting. And then they would be like, they would run on stage with the cardboard thing. And they would be like, the next day. Who is volunteering to, who are the actors that are like, oh, I'm acting as that kid in my algebra class. Like, I'm acting as the most popular girl on the cheerleading squad. And they're so beautiful and good looking.
Who built the sets? Yeah.
That's never true of theater, of actors. They are never good looking. You would never find that many men to do that scene in the lockers. There are never that many men who want to do theater. And if they are, they are not the 6 foot tall men with abs. Trust me. Trust me. I dated people in the theater department. They did not look like that. Nobody looked like that. Where did they find these actors, and why were they fine with acting out a real life story of other people that went to their high school?
It's wild. It's wild.
It's wild. Oh man, it really, they just, I could do a whole podcast about Euphoria, but just me, just about
Lexi's play. I hear you.
Just about the play.
I hear you.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I got to look up, are there wrap ups about,
it's a post show recap with Grace Leader and Amon Adwin.
I'm going to have gangbusters. To go listen just to that episode.
It was a big hit.
Play.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's wonderful. Of course. That's great. I love them.
Multiple episodes about the play.
Oh, I have to go listen to it because I can't be the only one like so upset by this. It was, the play within a play and the play within the movie. And it's just, it's not, you know what? It's just the theater kids have something to say about it. And we want representation, but accuracy.
Accurate.
Yeah. And what happened to Oklahoma? They just decided not to do that play?
Too boring.
And did people get, where is the budget coming from? There's so many questions.
Yeah. I mean, look, that many questions need to be asked about Euphoria High School. Probably the school play is not even in the top 100.
I don't know. I think it's up there. It's very strange.
Well, many questions.
But I do appreciate that you dug back in my tweets to find, to say about
it's a mutual interest to talk about. Okay,
I'm glad
play.
That we could connect on that.
Okay, Gabby, you mentioned you have a Twitch channel. Well, what are you streaming?
I stream like puzzle and strategy games. So if you're a fan of Survivor and you like sort of the element of like deciphering clues and figuring out strategy of how to figure out puzzles. That is the kind of game that I like. And usually I find like a short, cute little game that has maybe beautiful art or like a really nice story. And you have to kind of unlock puzzles to progress the story.
That sounds so nice.
I saw that you did an escape room.
We did that.
I watched it.
Yes. Yes. What'd you think?
It was fun, but also frustrating because I can tell that not all of you are very frequent escape roomers.
Right.
Yeah. So it was super fun to watch, but there definitely were times where I was like, no, that's not the answer. And by the way, if you ever watch my Twitch stream, you'll have the exact same experience because that's just what happened.
There was a lot of button mashing going on when we did that.
It was very fun and very funny. It was, it was entertaining.
Gabby, where can people keep up with you?
So I'm on Twitter at Gabby Pascuzzi. And if you want to stream, look at my Twitch stream. It is twitch.tv/GabScoozy.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it. Cause I do have an Instagram, but people may notice they have, I've gone on private because I don't really use it anymore. It doesn't make sense for me to be on private because I have 20,000 followers, but it's, if you're sitting in my requests, it's just, I'm just sorry. It's too, if there was an accept all button, I would do it, but they don't have that button and I just don't want to go through it. So please don't take any offense, but I promise you, you are not missing out on anything. I don't post. I just keep my account open so I can see what other people are doing, but I don't even post anymore.
Well, Gabby, this was wonderful to get to catch up tonight. That I thought you were so on point.
Oh, thank
you. Your camera and your audio were pristine.
Pristine. It took no effort at all. It worked immediately. It was
worth
it.
It was worth it. I hope we do this more often.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to talk about the premiere.
To kick off the new season of Recaps.
Kick it off. I personally love when I can just talk about like the people and I don't have to get too into the weeds about strategy because I truly am like, I'm like a reformed casual fan now. Like I don't know any of the tribe names and it's just fun for me to chat about it with fellow fans, but not like, you know, delve way into the like who should have done what. It's been very fun and appreciate that the episode gave us so much good meat to talk about. The cast has been wonderful and it's always fun to come on to RHAP, so thank you.
Okay, well we've seen so many cameos. Is that Millie or Ollie?
This is Ollie, and if you're on the video then you can kind of see
here's
my cat, and maybe can you meow into the microphone? No, but if you watch the video, cool you'll eyes, see my lovely cat, and I post about them on Twitter because it's my only interest anymore.
Okay. Well, from here, we have some more great podcasts coming your way this weekend because we still have our Survivor Feedback Show. Chappelle is going to join us. We're going to have a lot of fun going through all of your voicemails. Robinswebsite.com/feedback. We'll listen to a bunch of sound clips from the episode, and then we'll get into the Survivor social media. And I'm sure we have some good ones from this week. And then we have a brand new show for the patrons of Robinson Podcast. Gabby, I'm opening up the Survivor Academy.
Oh, I heard. How cool.
It's like Hogwarts, but for Survivor. Your
that
favorite.
That is really cool. Yeah. Are you charging money for it? No,
well,
it's for patrons.
I guess so. But it's not like, it's not like a sleazy, it's a
pay. Being a patron is worth it for so many other reasons.
So many other reasons. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you become a patron, you'll get access to the brand new show we're doing, taking a deep dive into the strategy for future Survivor players on Survivor Academy. Phil Thompson will join me this weekend. Be on the lookout for that. Robinswebsite.com/patron for more information. Gabby, thank you again for joining us and really appreciate everybody who listened to the podcast and watched us on YouTube. Be sure to subscribe to not miss an episode of Robinson Podcast. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.